a connection to the pipe bombs mailed to Trump critics, how vaping and oil drilling are related in Florida. And will David Beckham get his soccer stadium in Miami? Welcome to the South Florida Roundup. I'm Jessica Bakeman. Tom Hudson is off this week. An Aventura man was arrested in connection with the crude explosive devices mailed out to critics of President Trump this week. At least one of them passed through an Opa-locka mail facility. Do you want to ban vaping at your job and drilling off the coast of Florida? It's yes to both or no to both. Why are some of the ballot questions bundled together, even if they don't seem related? Also, a look at Miami-Dade's ballot. Will a new soccer stadium finally become a reality? Your phone calls and tweets coming up on the South Florida Roundup here on WLRN. Welcome back to the South Florida Roundup on WLRN. I'm Jessica Bakeman, in for Tom Hudson, who's off this week. We are covering a breaking story today. An Aventura man was arrested just a few hours ago in connection with the crude explosive devices mailed out this week to prominent Democrats and critics of President Trump. Our news partner, the Miami Herald, is reporting the man was arrested in Plantation around 10 a.m. and is being questioned by federal investigators. That's after mail scans showed at least one of the packages containing a pipe bomb making its way through the sorting facility in Opa-locka. The Herald reported yesterday it's likely the same package that was found at Congressman Debbie Wasserman Schultz's office Wednesday. And this morning, the FBI says an 11th package had been discovered in Opa-locka, this one addressed to New Jersey Senator Cory Booker. We don't yet have all the details about who sent the packages and why. They targeted prominent Democratic critics of President Trump, including former President Barack Obama and former presidential candidate Hillary Clinton. Clinton was in South Florida earlier this week. She was at a fundraising event hours after the Secret Service intercepted one of the suspicious packages addressed to her home in New York.
It is a troubling time, isn't it? And it's a time of deep divisions, and we have to do everything we can to bring our country together.
Call us with your questions or comments at 800-743-WLRN. That's 800-743-9576. Or you can tweet at us at WLRN. Joining us now to give us the latest on the packages is WLRN's Daniel Rivero here with me in studio. Thanks, Danny.
Thanks for having me.
And also we have Miami Herald reporter David Ovalle on the phone. He's in the field reporting today. Hey, David.
Hi, how are you?
I'm great. I'm so glad that you're joining us today to help us get up to speed here. So the Herald has reported the suspect's name. I'm not totally sure I'm pronouncing this correctly. Is Cesar Sayoc. That's S-A-Y-O-C. He's 56. And can you tell us what we know about him so far?
Well, so far, he's 56 years old, has an address in Aventura, also one in Miramar. He was arrested outside an auto parts store in Plantation, and it appears he's a pro Trump personality, I guess, local personality. He's got like a van that he's very proud of, that he posts a lot of pictures on social media of. He's got a criminal history. He's actually been convicted of a bomb threat back in the early 2000s in Miami-Dade. And, of course, we're still sorting through all of his bio, so, you know, a lot of this is a fluid situation. But as of right now, his name has not been officially announced by the authorities, but, you know, our sources have told us that this is indeed the man who they are questioning right now for the pipe bomb.
You mentioned his van. I think there's a picture of it sort of floating around showing stickers of President Trump. Is that right?
Yes, it appears, and it appears at least some of the photos we've seen on his social media, or what purports to be his social media, are pictures of him at Trump rally, stuff like that. So it, again, this is still to be confirmed that it is indeed the same person, but, you know, it's a pretty unique name, and one of the mugshots we have of him is definitely the same person.
Right. Okay. And David, as you mentioned, he's been in trouble with the law before. Daniel Rivero with WLRN, can you tell us more about that?
Yep. So Mr. Sayoc has a lengthy criminal record in Miami-Dade and Broward counties, which is what we've been looking at. Regarding the arrest that was made for the bomb threat, we don't know more about it. I was just informed by the Miami-Dade State Attorney's Office that the court files records for that case have been destroyed, so we don't know more about that at this time. he does in Broward County. He had multiple arrests. He was arrested for possession of intent to sell testosterone, which would indicate steroids in the early 2000s. He had a felony battery in 2013. In 1994, there was a civil case brought against him for domestic violence. And that was someone who shares one of his surnames. It's not exactly clear who that person is. It appears that he violated court orders in that case. But this is all ongoing. We're kind of learning more about this man. And we do know he told authorities in Broward County that he was born in Brooklyn, New York.
Okay. And again, to note that this is breaking, and you know, we've just recently learned his name and are still working to confirm a bunch of these details, but are trying to get the most up-to-date information we can. David Ovalle, can you tell us about the circumstances of the arrest that happened this morning?
Well, a lot of the circumstances are still unclear of his arrest, but he was arrested outside an auto parts store in Plantation. His van, the one that he's, you know, spent pictures of it have been floating all over social media, was impounded, and he's being questioned right now at the FBI headquarters. You know, our sources tell us that his DNA was found on the on some of the packages, which of course is very strong evidence if it's true. And because he has a lengthy criminal history, his DNA would have been on file with the Florida Department of Law Enforcement. So, you know, because the priority of this case and the high profile nature of this case, they were able to get DNA results really, really quickly. Sometimes those things take weeks and weeks to get back, but in this case, they seem to have rushed it.
Well, and I know things are changing quickly, but at one point there was advertised a press conference at 2:30. Is that something you're going to be at, and do you know what we expect to learn there?
I imagine they will talk more about you know, the circumstances of the arrest, how they managed to track it down. I mean, it's pretty remarkable. They kept it pretty hush-hush. I'm sure they've been looking at him at least for more than a day. So, you know, there were sort of vague reports out there that some of them, the packages may have been mailed from Florida, but of course, you know, that some of them had gone through the mail facility at the Opa-locka Airport, the sorting facility. But you know, I'm sure we'll learn more about that and how they managed to crack the case.
Okay, and I understand the FBI found a package this morning addressed to Cory Booker in Opa-locka. Do you know if there was anything different or notable about that package compared to the other ones?
I believe it was all the same MO, same style of packages. Remember, that Opa-locka facility is a huge sorting facility. Basically, any package that's sent to and from South Florida through the Postal Service gets sent through there. So, you know, there's obviously a lot to sift through for the authorities. But no, they were very similar. What we were told is they're very similar to the other ones that were sent.
And that was what made investigators think that package that was found this morning was sent by the same person or people who sent the other ones, because I wondered if they were concerned about copycats.
You know, I don't know about copycats. You know, we haven't heard that there's been any evidence of that, but I'm sure once they do the DNA and forensic analysis of genetic material found on all of those, and depends what he confesses to. If he confesses at all, he may confess to how many he's done and to who they were addressed.
And you mentioned the Opa-locka facility is really huge, and a lot of things you know, are going through that. Is that what drew them to that post office? Can you kind of catch us up in terms of, you know, what we learned yesterday and in the last couple of days about why South Florida was connected to this?
Well, if he's from here, obviously it would stand to reason that he's sending them from here, so they have to be postmarked. So it's sort of natural that they would go through there. Now, some of these packages also had return addresses for Debbie Wasserman Schultz, who's another target of sort of the right wing conservative party, or you know, sort of the more extreme elements of it, anyways. And so, you know, it would stand to reason that if those packages were getting returned, then they would have to be going through that mail facility. So it's just sort of a transit point for anything going and coming into South Florida.
And you mentioned Congresswoman Debbie Wasserman Schultz and the fact that, you know, her office was listed as the return addresses on these packages. Obviously, she did not send them, but do we know why someone would want to make it look like she did?
It's hard to speculate. I mean, it could be anything. He could, you know, whoever the bomber is, if this is indeed the bomber, it could just be to sow discord, to, you know, just to throw a little bit of chaos into society before the elections. you know, I guess we'll learn more about his motivations as he's booked and we learn more from the U.S. Attorney's Office.
And is there anything else you'd add, David, or anything that you're, like, what are you focused on next as this story develops?
I think obviously we'd be interested, and we'd want to know more about his motivations. Why do this? Why now? Was he motivated by the anti-press or anti-Democrat rhetoric that's coming out of Washington? And it could just be, you know, sometimes people are crazy and they just want the attention and they want to sow discord. And I think we just need to kind of wait and see and figure out what the authorities are able to glean from him after questioning him.
And you said that he's being questioned at the FBI headquarters. Where is that?
It's in Broward.
Okay. And I wonder if we know anything about what that sort of questioning entails.
Well, his questioning would obviously entail, he'd be read his Miranda rights, and of course he could refuse to question. And there's no one that could make him answer any questions that would be incriminating. If he does speak, I'm sure he would, they would treat him nicely and try to get him to build a rapport with him and try to get him to speak about what motivated him. And if he's someone that's, wants the attention and likes the attention, as is kind of clear from his van and from his social media posts, he may be more than willing to speak.
Okay, David Ovalle with the Miami Herald, thank you so much for joining us to fill us in on all of this. We actually also have WLRN reporter Katie Switalski, who is joining us from Plantation. She's been reporting from the scene where the arrest took place. Katie, do we have you?
Hi, Jessica. Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
We are crossing State Road 7. I just had an interview with an eyewitness who saw the arrest. He's a former police officer. And he was telling me that the suspect actually went very peacefully. There was no resistance that he could see. And he described the look on Cesar Altieri Sayoc's face when he was arrested as, very resigned. He described it as an okay, they got me kind of face. But everything went very smoothly.
And what does it look like there now? What's going on there now?
It is a media frenzy, of course. And State Road 7 is pretty busy, so I apologize if you can hear cars. We're right off the side of the road. But so the AutoZone right now, there's still FBI agents inside looking at computer systems in AutoZone. And what's interesting is AutoZone actually tracks customers by their cell phone number. So we're not sure what they're looking at on the computers, but they do know that they have information in an AutoZone system about Sayoc.
And so do they think that he was a customer there?
He was apparently shopping at the time of the arrest. So it's not confirmed that he was just a customer. We're not sure yet if he had any employee connection here, but we're still trying to find that out. But people are saying so far that he was shopping at the time.
And what are you looking for as the day goes on? What are you going to keep an eye on?
Well, it's pretty clear that the FBI is not going to talk to us. I know there's a press conference in Washington, D.C. at 2:30 today. However, the FBI agents here and the NYPD agents who were also here earlier are not looking to talk. So what I think I'm looking for is, did anybody recognize this van of his that was towed away with lots of political stickers on it? Does anyone know who Mr. Sayoc is?
Right. Well, thank you so much, Katie Switalski, for keeping us updated. I know that you're going to be reporting on this further today, and WLRN News will be bringing other updates going forward. And thanks again to Miami Herald reporter David Ovalle and WLRN reporter Danny Rivera, who's here in the studio with me, the three of you, for telling us the latest of what we know on this ongoing breaking story.
Thank you, Jessica.
Thank you.
Okay, well, when we come back, we'll still have Danny Rivero here with us because he's going to be telling us about bundling. Have you heard the term bundling referring to state amendments on the ballot? We're going to find out more about why some ballot questions that seem unrelated are asked together. So give us a call at 800-743-WLRN. I'm Jessica Bakeman, and you're listening to the South Florida Roundup. I'm Jessica Bakeman, and welcome to the South Florida Roundup on WLRN. I'm in this week for Tom Hudson. South Floridians will vote on up to a dozen proposed constitutional amendments, and some of this year's amendments group two or more questions together, often unrelated to one another. There's Amendment 9, for example. It asks voters to vote on a ban of offshore oil drilling and a ban on vaping in the workplace. Then Amendment 10, that asks voters to keep a State Department of Veterans Affairs, create an Office of Counterterrorism, and make officials like sheriffs and tax collectors elected officials. That last question would affect Broward and Miami-Dade counties, which currently appoint some of those officials. A state committee called the Constitution Revision Commission decided to bundle several of these proposed state amendments. Ellen Friedan was on that commission when it met last time 20 years ago in 1998.
I think that what the Constitution Revision Commission did is it packed things that they thought would be popular along with things that they really wanted but thought wouldn't be popular.
If you've already voted, did you find the bundled amendments confusing? Or maybe it helped you move through your ballot faster? Give us a call. Let us know what you think. 800-743-WLRN. That's 800-743-9576. We're back here with WLRN reporter Danny Rivero to talk about this quirk of Florida politics. Danny, tell us more about the Constitution Revision Commission. What is it?
So the Constitution Revision Commission is basically a uniquely Floridian thing that the state does where every 20 years, certain people from the state that are appointed by the governor, the Speaker of the House, Speaker of the Senate, and the Chief Justice of the state Supreme Court, they all kind of offer people up, and then these people gather every 20 years and suggest changes to the Florida Constitution. And so this year, 2018, is the third time that this happened. This previously happened in 1978. Nothing passed that time. It happened in 98. A couple things passed, and then now we're here all over again.
So we're going to see what's going to happen with the 2018 Constitution Revision Commission. Okay, so you said this is uniquely for Floridian. Why does this exist? Like, why, you know, what was the reasoning when it was created as far as, you know, why people thought it would be a valuable thing to have?
Well, the original thinking is that the Constitution, the state Constitution, is somewhat of a fluid document. I mean, it's already amended through either citizen petitions, or the legislature can suggest things, or the tax commission can suggest things. So there's methods to kind of make these changes, but they wanted to create a periodical, every so often, body that forms in order to have a conversation, have public meetings, public hearings where people can suggest changes to it, and then have some kind of a process where people can suggest things and then maybe get the Constitution changed.
Right. So we can have constitutional amendments on the ballot that come about through gathering signatures on a petition. If you get enough signatures, you can get it on the ballot. Also, the legislature with a supermajority can pass changes, and then it will go to the voters for approval. So this is just another way of being able to make changes to the Constitution. What's the political makeup of the CRC this time around?
So this time around, every appointment that was made by a Republican, or in the case of the Chief Justice Kennedy, a Republican appointed official. And that's a pretty stark contrast to where we were last time in 1998. It was a pretty even split in 98 between Democrats and Republicans. There was just one more Democrat than Republicans. And that, and we just heard a bite from Ellen Friedan, who I talked to. That was a main concern of hers, because she said, you know, last time we met, because we weren't then a one-party state, we had to make a lot of, you know, deals. We had to find things that were appealable and palatable to both parties, and then you had to reach some kind of a compromise. This time around, Florida has essentially been a one-party state for about 20 years now. So this time around, it's all Republicans or Republican appointed people, and make it look political.
Right. And when you say a one party state, obviously you're talking about, you know, statewide officials and the legislature in terms of being controlled by Republicans. But the state itself politically is still a purple swing state. So I wonder, I'm sure one of the things that they considered is, you know, if the proposals that come out of the CRC are very conservative because of the conservative makeup of the body this time around, that those proposals might be too conservative for voters in a purple state, especially when you see such a motivated electorate with the gubernatorial campaign this time around.
That's right. And that's been a lot of the criticism, and notably the courts actually agreed with it. There was one amendment that was thrown off of the ballots, which was Amendment 8, which would have made term limits for school board members of local school boards. But additionally, it would have allowed the state to create charter schools, which is a loved position on the right.
It would have let the state make that decision rather than leaving that decision to local school districts as it is now.
Exactly. As it is right now, the state cannot create charter schools. And so this would have done that. It was three questions in one. The courts came in and they said, you guys can't do this. The ballot language itself, the summary that people would read, didn't even have the word charter schools. So they felt that it was very misleading. They were trying to kind of camouflage it with these other questions in order to get this major change to charter schools passed, which is kind of a conservative rallying point. And then the state Supreme Court said, you can't do that. You got to get this off the ballot. So now it skips from 7 to 9. We don't have an 8.
Okay, Danny. So hold that thought. We'll talk more about bundling, what it is and why it's happening. But, oh, you know what? I was going to go to a phone call and that phone call is no longer there. So back to you, Danny.
It happens.
You started to get into this a little bit, but why would bundling be a strategy that the CRC would move forward with?
Well, there's different takes on this question. If you talk to people who are not happy with some of the questions, they'll say, you know, this is basically flying under false colors, is how they say it, or flying under a false flag. Amendment 10 would have pretty drastic consequences to some counties across the state, like Miami-Dade. And that's one question out of four that are asked in Amendment 10. The other ones that are asked in that case is, do you want to make the State Department of Veterans Affairs in the Constitution? Do you want to put a state anti-terrorism office in the Constitution? And then in the middle, you have this one that would affect how counties kind of have the right to home rule, to rule themselves. You know, I have a story coming out in a couple of days. You'll hear more about it. But I talked to a couple people in Broward County and in Miami-Dade County that said, you know, this is wrong. Like, who's going to vote against veterans? Who's going to vote for not having an office of terrorism? And in the middle, you stick this thing that's going to have this profound effect on local governments that people might not have voted on.
I want to make sure that our listeners know that we would love to hear from them. They can call us at 800-743-WLRN. That's 800-743-9576. You can also tweet at us at WLRN. We want to know what you think about these bundled amendments and how that's affecting your experience when you're voting. So, Danny, you were talking about how, you know, some people argue it's misleading or maybe manipulative to, you know, have several questions where you don't get to choose on each question. You have to choose on all three or all four or however many together. But from what I understand, the CRC has argued that some of these questions are related. Like, let's talk about Amendment 9. What are they saying about that?
So Amendment 9 is the question that would ban either or both offshore drilling and vaping in the workplace. And if you feel you don't want offshore drilling, but you kind of like vaping at work or having that option, well, you don't have an option in this question. You have to say yes to both or no to both. So that's kind of a case in point. It's kind of become a poster child of what are these two things doing together.
And yet they say, you know, it's all about the environment, right?
Yes, I'm sorry. The explanation for why these things are put together is that these things both have to do with the lived environment. Keeping Floridians in a clean and safe place.
So one of the other things about these ballot questions, and, you know, I would also love to tell listeners to go to our website. We have a voter's guide that talks about not only the state amendments, but the local ballot questions, which we'll be talking about a little bit later in the show. You can find that at amendments.wlrn.org. Danny had a huge part in helping put that together. And that'll give you some more information about the questions. And we also, you know, one of the things about having those many questions is that it makes the ballot longer. And we asked some of our listeners, you know, what did they think when they went to the polls, if they've already voted? And we got some comments back, so I'm going to share a couple of those with you. Ian Linder Sheldon is a senior at Coral Gables High School. He commented to us, "I filled out the entire ballot. I'm 18 years old, and this is my first election. I got a sample ballot the day before, and even though a lot of the wording in the amendments was confusing, I did my research and voted on every issue. So that's an interesting point, I think. This time around, with all the questions, voters are really having to do a lot more of that research on the front end and figuring out their plan for voting when they're going in. And now let's go to the phones. We got a couple of you calling in here. Let's first talk to Daniel. He's in Palm Beach Gardens. Daniel, you're on the air. Tell us what you think about this.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. So I ran into this question about offshore drilling and vaping, and I'm fairly strongly against offshore drilling, so I went with that issue. But I guess really the risk is that, you know, I had to give up vaping. I'm against smoking, so it's no problem to me. But you have to trade off like that. Very clear that these are very weighted questions, and you always, you're going to run into these problems where you have to write off an issue you might have a position on and have to choose which one's most important to you.
So, Daniel, even though you said you don't particularly care for smoking, if you had just that one question about whether to ban vaping in the workplace, you would have voted differently?
Well, you know, in this case, I probably would have also voted against vaping, but had it been another issue where I might have, was against the issue, I would have still voted against the offshore drilling because it's such an important point.
I wonder if you had thought at all about if there was a question that bundled, you know, multiple issues that you felt starkly differently on, would you maybe choose to skip that question altogether?
No, I think at the end of the day, you got to make a call. When it's something so important like offshore drilling, our environment, sea level rise and fossil fuels, those kinds of issues, and I think really what the politicians are trying to get at with these bundling is that they're sticking these very controversial issues in with things that may not be as important so that they can sway the electorate. And I don't think it's a very fair way to do things.
Okay, thank you so much, Daniel, for your thoughts. We really appreciate it. Next, we're going to go to Alicia. She's in Boca Raton. Alicia, you are on the air.
Hi. Yes. Hi. Can you hear me?
I can.
Okay. Hi. Thank you for having the show. It's really interesting, and I love being a part of it. My question is a little bit off. It's a concern that I have, and I'm surprised it's not being brought up over and over again. As a matter of fact, it has to do with the film industry. And one of the biggest film producers in South Florida actually recently passed away, Rose Warner. And it's so sad that there is no film tax incentive no longer, and all of the jobs for film and all the productions are being done now elsewhere. Like, Atlanta is a hot spot now. Places that in films and in TV where it takes place in Florida is being shot elsewhere. And that's taking away a lot of the jobs for the production, you know, things that goes in anywhere from food and beverage to the costume designers to all that sort, and actors and directors. And
Alicia, thank you so much for your comment. I'm not aware of a question about the film industry incentives on this ballot, but it's definitely something to think about for the future if that comes up. Okay, let's take one more call from Joaquim in Coral Gables.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. My comment is on the bundling of the questions. Of the amendment. You feel like it's a mockery of you and it's a joke. I mean, these people bundle things that are completely unrelated. They're trying to force you to vote for one thing that may be important for you and vote for things that you don't want. I don't understand how this is even allowed.
Joaquim, did you vote already, if you mind me asking?
Yes, I voted yesterday. I sat with my wife and we went over our home ballot. And actually, it took me much longer than any other election because of the bundling. I mean, many of the times I ended up not voting for anything because I think this is I felt like they were playing me.
So, Joaquim, let me ask you this: let me just jump in here. So, you said that it feels longer, but from what I understand, one of the arguments that the people who've created these bundled questions make is that it actually helps with making the ballot feel shorter because instead of having three separate questions, you have one question that accomplishes three things.
No. You have to think much more on that question. It took me yesterday, I would say, 40 minutes to be able to go through the ballot, and so I think it's really not an advantage at all. So
Okay, Joaquim, thank you so much for your call. We really appreciate your take. I'm going to throw that to Danny. Is that the kind of sentiment that you've been hearing from voters, that they feel like the government is laughing at them with this bundling?
I think it's definitely a thing that's out there, and it actually relates to the latest case. There was three of these questions that were before the state Supreme Court that you know they were ultimately decided after people actually started voting. And the question that the lawyers for that was making was very interesting, and they were making the argument that bundling amendments in this way is actually a First Amendment issue, because you as a voter don't have the right to say yes to this one, no to that one, yes to this one. You have to take them all or leave them all. The court ultimately said that wasn't a First Amendment issue. They ruled against it, but notably, three of the seven justices signed a separate opinion saying this was not okay. This whole thing is not okay. They agreed with the outcome because they said the filing wasn't the proper filing, but they said this should not be allowed, and that could play a role in future case law when people look back on these cases.
And like I mentioned before, we have the voter's guide on our website, which gives, you know, lots of information about these questions. One of the listeners' comments that we got was from Anita in Oakland Park. And she says when she was thinking about her ballot, the only question she didn't fill out was for the Soil and Water Commission race. She says she couldn't find any information on those candidates. So I think that's something that voters have been frustrated with, that there's so much on the ballot and they're not totally sure how they can find out what they should do.
I think that's a valid concern. What we put on the website at WLRN.org is basically every question you're asked, not every candidate race, but every question. So that's municipal, county, and state level questions. And the school boards have their own questions. So we put all those on there.
And we're going to actually talk about a couple of those local amendments in Miami later on in the show. And again, if you want to go to that, it's amendments.wlrn.org. Let's take another call. This one from Sarah in Miami.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Hi, Sarah. Thanks for calling.
Thank you. The humorous side of me wants to call it legislative bungling with a G, because of the way the bundles or the bungles are made. And the other side of me wants to say another source, the League of Women Voters, has information out there that states each of the amendments, says what the amendment means, and then if you vote yes on the amendment, this is what will happen, and if you vote no on the amendment, that is what will happen. And regardless of your stand, it helps you clarify, I think, some of the consequences of the yes and no vote.
Well, thank you, Sarah, for that. And that's a suggestion for where you can find out some more information on those. I know that she's saying that is a nonpartisan guide, although I know that League of Women Voters has been involved in this issue. Isn't that right, Danny?
Yeah, they have. They brought a couple, I believe two cases. I might be mistaken on that. At least one case to the state Supreme Court over some of these bundled questions.
Okay, and let's go to Karen. She's calling from Wilton Manors.
There. I was calling because it goes back to the amendment about vaping. And it's ridiculous that we would even put anything in our Constitution about vaping. I mean, items in the Constitution should be of the utmost importance to the state of Florida, about our rights. And the idea that the board would put something about vaping is just ridiculous.
Well, that's an interesting point, Karen. Danny, when we talk about these constitutional amendments and the fact that we have so many avenues to make changes to our Constitution, I know that it's something that comes up where people say, you know, are we putting things that really aren't so, so important that they need to be in the governing document of our state in the Constitution? Have you heard that at all with the vaping question that Karen brings up?
Not specifically on that vaping question, but I mean, it is worth reiterating that when you put something into the state constitution, that's about the strongest thing you can do. You can make a state statute, which is much easier to repeal or to adjust. Once you put something in the state constitution, it's pretty much there. It's not going anywhere for the foreseeable future unless, you know, a super majority of people decide to really take this on.
Okay, and we're going to take another call from Maya in Miami Beach. Hey, Maya, you're on the air.
Thank you. I think this whole bundle thing is absolutely horrible and outrageous, what they do to voters. Voting should be not only a privilege, but it should be something that is something wonderful and great and a contribution to your country. The other thing, point that I want to make is that I personally, and I know there's probably going to be a lot of people that disagree with me, think that voting should be mandatory. There are many, many countries in this world, Australia being one, where voting is mandatory. Now, if it's mandatory, that would mean that everyone would be ushered to the polls some way or another. Another thing, that means that
we're running short on time, so let me stop you there. But that's a great point. And, you know, I think that this election cycle in particular, you know, people haven't been really thinking about what their vote means to them. And Danny wants to jump in.
Yeah, I think to the last caller's point, you know, the ballots this time are very long, and it could very well be an issue. I mean, so take in Miami, the municipality North Bay Village, they have 16 of their own ballot questions. That's in addition to the 7 county questions, in addition to the 12 state questions,
that's
in addition
lot.
To the federal, state, and local wow. people running for office. So, I mean, I don't want to make a prediction, but it can be foreseeable that it's going to take people a lot of time in the voting booth running through these things.
Okay, and with that, we're going to take a break soon. Still to come, the local ballot in Miami is asking voters to approve new land deals, including a soccer stadium on Miami's only publicly owned golf course. What do you think about that? Call us at 800-743-WLRN. You're listening to the South Florida Roundup on WLRN. I'm Jessica Bakeman. Welcome back to the South Florida Roundup here on WLRN. I'm Jessica Bakeman, in this week for Tom Hudson. Thank you for listening and supporting public radio. As we've been talking about, early voting across South Florida is underway. Voters are facing a long ballot this general election. There are 105 different questions across the region that could possibly be on your ballot. City of Miami voters will be deciding on a few land-related deals. There's the fate of David Beckham's soccer stadium. We're going to get to that. The question is whether to build the stadium on Miami's only municipal golf course near the airport. There's also another proposed public land deal involving prime waterfront real estate. So we asked our listeners whether they were filling out their whole ballot, since the ballots are pretty long this time. Jonathan H. in Fort Lauderdale told us that he filled out every single question, as did Scott in Miami Lakes. And Scott says, it took about an hour, and I was prepared before I went in knowing how I was going to vote. We want to hear from you. We want to know what you think about the ballot questions on your local ballot and what your experience has been like voting, if you've voted already, what kind of preparation you've done for voting. You can call us at 800-743-WLRN. That's 800-743-9576, and you can tweet at us at WLRN. Joining us in studio now to discuss the ballot questions in Miami is Miami Herald reporter Joey Fletches. Thank you so much for being here, Joey.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, so tell us about the soccer stadium ballot question. What is it asking voters to decide?
So there's been a lot of talk about David Beckham's MLS team, his Major League Soccer team, coming to Miami, and the quest has been long. We've been talking about it for 5 years, and the main question has been, where are they going to play? This ballot question, it deals with that question. It's going to ask the voters in Miami if they are willing to waive a public bidding law so that the ownership group of this team can open Miami Freedom Park, which is a sprawling stadium and commercial complex that would replace Mel Reese Golf Course, the city-owned golf course that is directly east of Miami International Airport.
And if voters approve the question, it'll be more than just a soccer stadium. Is that right?
That's right. We're talking about a 10.5-acre, 25,000-seat, more or less, soccer stadium, but it would come accompanied with 1 million square feet of retail, office, and hotel. It would come with a parking structure that would be one story. On the roof of that parking structure would be public soccer fields. It would come also with a 58-acre public park that would actually not be leased to the ownership group, but still owned by Miami, but developed by the ownership group. Also a golf entertainment facility of some sort, kind of like Top Golf. That is the kind of site plan for this park. And the idea is that usually the city of Miami would have to put out a public solicitation and allow people to come bid so that the taxpayers can get the best bang for their buck, right? In this case, this has come together very quickly in the last several months. And so what the city is asking the voters to consider is to waive that bidding requirement and give this deal to David Beckham and his partners.
Okay, we'll talk about more about the bidding process in a second. But first, so you said the stadium would go where there's currently Miami's only publicly owned golf course.
Right.
So is this a question of soccer versus golf?
It's more nuanced than that. I think that it can be easily characterized that way and politicized that way. But, I mean, yeah, you're talking about whether or not you're going to have this golf course, 18-hole golf course, where, by the way, there's also a very well-regarded youth program called the First Team Miami. It's like a youth empowerment and golf program. But there's that, and then you would have this complex with soccer on it. But it's really – a lot of it has to do with whether or not there's going to be a private use on public land. And I think there's a lot of people that have been, you know, pointing that out rightfully, that that's at the heart of this question. If you're going to make this deal to allow someone who's going to have a for-profit development on this public land.
And David Beckham is part owner of the Miami MLS team that's hoping to play at the stadium. What happens to David Beckham's soccer team if this is not approved by voters?
Well, one of his partners and the local kind of face and partner of this whole initiative is Jorge Mas, who joined the ownership group late last year and really pushed for them to move out of a piece of land that they partially owned in Overtown. And that was the most recent version of the stadium plan to be built in Overtown. What they're going to do after, if there is a no vote from the Miami voters, there's no plan B, is what Jorge Mas's most recent answer was last week.
And what is the pitch from city leaders about why voters should approve this?
Well, one of the city leaders that has been, you know, most stridently behind this, really, and but you know, there's a 3-2 vote, so three commissioners, but Mayor Francis Suarez has really backed this from the beginning. He's arguing that there would be increased tax revenue and that there would be a public benefit in this 58-acre park that would be more accessible than, say, the golf course, which you do have to pay to access and play on, and that there would be soccer in Miami. And that's something that's been, you know, has not yet happened in this talk about a Major League Soccer team.
And as you mentioned, you know, part of this question is whether the voters think it's okay to skip the typical bidding process. And, you know, obviously those bidding processes exist to protect taxpayer investments, right? To make sure that the bid isn't going to somebody who's going to come in and do work for a lot more money than somebody else might do it at a cheaper price. So what is the pitch to skip that process and try to get this moving so quickly?
Well, the pitch is that there are these public benefits attached to it. They include, you know, rent payments of $3.6 million every year to the city, in addition, in the tax revenue that I mentioned before, and additional monies for the finishing of the Miami Bayfront Baywalk on the Bayfront, and
that's downtown.
That's downtown, yeah, and the Riverwalk. There's money for that. There's money for public parks. So the idea is that the ownership is saying, look, we understand that we're asking for an awful lot here. Here's what we're giving. Now, on the flip side, there's been criticism from folks in local real estate, say $3.6 million is not enough of a fair rent. And there's really not a good deal being hammered out here. It might look like one, but it's not. And another interesting thing is that Mel Reese Golf Course actually sits on contaminated soil. So there's a question that remains about how much contaminated soil there is, how much would it cost to clean that up? Would it require complete removal? Could you cap it?
What is it contaminated with?
It's contaminated with it's toxic ash from an old municipal incinerator that had been dumped there decades ago. Right now, its use as a golf course means it's been basically capped and covered with that golf course and has been approved for that use. There would be excavation required for this, for a stadium, and there'd be some concrete obviously covering and paved over this, but there would be also some park space. So there are questions about how that could be handled, and Jorge Mas has said he has a budget of about $35 million for that. Is that enough? We don't know for sure. He says consultants are telling him that that is enough, but you know, there are members of the public and voters who are skeptical.
Okay, well, we want to hear from you. Do you think that this soccer stadium is a good deal? Is it worth it to you to skip the regular bidding process to make sure that the Major League Soccer team plays in Miami? Would you miss the golf course? Give us a call at 800-743-WLRN. That's 800-743-9576. And let's take a call here. We're going to go to Alejandro, who is calling from West Palm Beach. Hey, Alejandro, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
Great, thanks. Yeah, it's actually a kind of a concern and a question for about the previous comments about the length of time it takes to vote.
I'm
a little confused in, about it taking so long. I mean, for me, ever since I was 18, I don't think the voting process has ever been less than an hour, if not less than 2 hours.
Have you voted yet?
My research. No, I've not voted for this, not this election term yet. But I have looked at the sample ballot, and I've done research on many of the amendments.
And you think that this time around it's going to take about the same amount of time as it has for you in the past?
To actually vote, no. I mean, I've never really sat down and to bubble in a couple, you know, just to bubble in a couple of holes. It's never really taken me that long to ever do that. So.
Okay. Well, Alejandro, thank you so much for giving us a call. And we're going to go back to Joey Fletches here with the Miami Herald. We have just a few minutes left, but quickly I want to talk about another land deal that's on the Miami ballot. Joey, tell us about that one.
So the voters in Miami will also decide on what the city should do for a lease on the riverfront land where its current administration building stands. So this is the place where the office building where the city's workforce works out of. And it's not City Hall, because City Hall is actually really small. It's a historic building on Dinner Key. This is downtown on the Miami Riverfront. It's a 10-story tower that could be replaced if this is approved, if this lease is approved, by a private development. It would be a multi-tower residential with retail on the first floor development. And in return, the city would receive lease payments, and they would also get a new administration building either there or somewhere else.
And in this case, this project followed that bidding process that we talked about before that the city's trying to skip for the soccer stadium.
Right. This one was different. This was actually put out to a public solicitation. There was an award of a bid, and then there was a negotiation that lasted more than a few years, or about a few years. And that culminated in now this vote where they're putting forth terms that have been hashed out over a while. It's definitely a lot less controversial, I think a little less sexy for people since there's no, you know, soccer star involved, but it is a similar question.
And the husband of a Spice Girl.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. It's the developers Adler Group, and they would have a mix of housing in there. There would be some high-end, some workforce from what I've been told, but that could change, likely two condo, one rental. There would be a new administration building that the city says they need. They say they have outgrown the current building and they need a better facility to operate the city out of.
So building more for government workers to work in and also retail and some other things. Joey, how do you think these ballot questions on the soccer stadium and this land deal, how does that affect regular people who live in Miami? If you're a voter trying to decide, you know, how would you see this as affecting their lives?
That's a great question, because a lot of this boils down to some pretty some minutia, right? You're talking about numbers. You're talking about rent payments and percentages and whether there's a fair deal happening. And how does that affect you? Well, if you pay taxes, you trust the government to do the right thing with your money. And doing the right thing involves making good real estate decisions. And what we have here are two real estate decisions that the city could be entering into, two leases. They could be leasing our land, taxpayer land, to private entities where they would make money off of that. If that's something you're comfortable with, you know, you got to look at the numbers and see if that feels good to you. And if not, you might be saying, well, there's, in the case of the park, there's green space that could become not green space, which, by the way, they would the ownership group would be responsible for to replace somewhere else in the city of Miami. So there's a few different things going on there.
Well, thank you so much, Joey Fletches of the Miami Herald, for joining us. That will do it today for the South Florida Roundup. The South Florida Roundup is produced by Alexander Gonzalez. Our engagement producer is Katie Lepre. Teresa Frontado is our digital director. Our news director is Terrence Shepard. Alicia Zuckerman is our editorial director. The director of radio operations is Peter J. Mayers. WLRN's Director of Radio Programming and Technical Supervisor, is Jason Zapka. I'm Jessica Bakeman, in this week for Tom Hudson. Thank you for calling and listening to the South Florida Roundup on WLRN.